This is 88.9 FM, Neighborhood Public Radio. My name is Zephyr, and you're listening to Frank Prattle. I have a very special show today. Pretty damn excited about it. Got two artists who have an amazing show right now at SF Camera Work in downtown San Francisco. We have Isabel Masu. I hope I got that right.
Good.
All right. And then Dori Bowen as well. Hi, you guys. How are you?
Good.
You got to speak right into the mic, though.
Yes, right. We are.
Yeah. You're good. Good job.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. I got you. So why don't we start out with you guys just telling us a little bit about who you are, you know? Isabel, you want to chew?
Okay. So you pronounced it well. It's Isabel Masu. I am from France, but I'm living here now since a year and a half. I lived in the past here for 10 years and decided to boycott it in 2001, I think, if I remember well the date. But I think that's what it is. And then I don't think I'm going to go through the whole story. I'm just going to go through the history of where the show comes from, also this installation at Camera Work. In 2003, I've been part of an artist collective in Marseille, in the south of France, for like 5 years. And I was actually at the time doing a workshop with a woman from Algeria, and then also originated from the Maghreb countries. And those workshops had a lot with representation of Arab women, and then they also working with sound and working with images and related to actually like a personal project that I was actually developing at the time. But those workshops happened during the time that there was the whole problematic around secular, the veil in school in France in 2003, where the government decided that it was a very big problem, that young girls were going to, you know, decide to wear the veil, you know, while going to school. So, of course, you know, France was completely freaked out about this, and it brought up, like, a lot of subject about, you know, of course, like, women. Why are we focusing on women wearing the veil when there's actually a lot of other signs in the street or, you know, in the culture that has to do with, you know, the same issue? But then we decide that we're going to put it all on women. So I was thinking a lot about this, and I was thinking about how to do something with the art organization I was working with around this issue, and especially since we were in a neighborhood mainly from the Maghreb countries. It's completely in the midst of gentrification right now.
Right.
I decided to actually start to think about the Arab Image Foundation, which is an organization in Beirut who holds like 75,000 images of the Arab world and focus on maybe some images of Arab women from their archive. So this is the beginning of the story. And then I met Dori in 2003, and we started to like really think about it.
Where did you guys meet?
Marseille.
Do you care to elaborate or no? Was it a chance meeting on the street or?
It was Margaret, who's here in the studio. I was going to Marseille with my then girlfriend, and she said, "Well, you should meet Isabel Masu," and my Kathy Crane was. My girlfriend at the time was making a film called The Girl from Marseille, so we had to go to Marseille. And that's when we met Isabel.
The girl from Marseille.
Exactly, and we met that girl from Marseille.
continue. You met Dori, and you guys were both in Marseille and hanging out.
Well, not quite, but I mean, I'm not going to get into, like, you know, private details about her life, but basically what happened is, like, she is a Francophile for whatever reason. And then she stayed there for a few years, and then we actually ended up meeting in a different way, and then I was starting to tell her a lot about this project that I was working on, not really understanding how I was going to approach the Arab Image Foundation, because it's mainly images and archive, And we started to discuss it, and then we decided to go to Beirut, you know, as the best way of like actually seeing what was the archive about. And in the meantime, I also traveled in Algeria a lot. I had a project there with women in a center who opened in like the 90s for women who were like a victim of terrorism in Algeria. So I've been back and forth between Marseille and Algeria, and really starting to understand much more. I mean, having a very different kind of understanding of really what it meant, the not just the veil, but also like, you know, how women were wearing it, what it also meant as not just an image of victimization, but also as an image of strength, and then right. also like as an act of saying no to a lot of, you know, things. And we decided to go to Beirut, and then maybe you can tell us, since you were there too, about the rest.
And maybe actually if you want to give us a little history about yourself, Dori, and then kind of, you know, catch us up to that point.
Well, I come from a different perspective, and that's why I think that this project has been interesting. It has two perspectives, parallax view. And my interest and background is more from cultural studies, and I went to graduate school at a time when it was very significant to place yourself in terms of the project you were doing, in terms of identity. So you would say, as a black, as a Jew, as a lesbian, as a straight person, as a white person, so there was a lot of issues around identity. But it really troubled me in the sense that so much of what we know of the world is based on a kind of cross-identification. When we look at images from, and in this case, from the Middle East, we act on those images and make certain political statements or even policy based on an image of someone else and their identity in relationship to our own. So when Isabel and I started working on this project, I felt like it was very interesting but a bit dangerous, in the sense that as Westerners, we are looking towards the Arab world and looking at their collection and making certain statements around it and curating it. And in fact, we're the first non-Arab Image Foundation artists to work with the collection. They work with Akram Zatari, who's part of it, and Waleed Rod. And they're obviously one, their identity is intermixed with this identification of the Arab Image Foundation. So it was an interesting but challenging project to take on, two Westerners coming to Beirut, looking at the collection and thinking about mounting an exhibition based on that, and what would we say about it, and what could we say. So that was the challenge for me, but it also seemed very important at a time when those statements are being made all the time in the political realm. You know, right. This is what is happening in the Arab world, or as Isabel said, the image of the young Arab woman with the hijab is being used to make certain policies in France at the time, but since then in Britain as well. So I think it's really important for artists to take that on, to think about cross-identification and how we see the other side of the world through images. So that was my interest in the project. And when we went there, we didn't really have a very clear sense of what the project would be. Right. So we went to Beirut, and then Isabel said to me, "So what are we doing?" And I was like, "I don't know what we're doing." So we just went to see what we found. And there were two things that we found that really helped to shape it. And one was the diversity of the collection, which you can see online, but really to go through the images and see just how incredibly diverse.
So just to interject really quickly, there were 75,000 images, right?
Yes, there are now.
Okay.
They've been building it.
And the actual process that you guys went through, I mean, did you, you know, sit down in a chair and flip through all 75,000?
Well, that was the second part of what found, yeah. Which is that it's primarily now a digital archive, that they've moved the photographs off-site, and how you access the images through keywords on a database. And they said, well, if you're really, really interested in a particular image, we can go find it for you, but it's not here, it's off-site, it's being stored somewhere. So we found that interesting, that actually, like most archives that promote themselves as photo archives or document archives, they're primarily digital archives at this moment. And the way that we know these documents or access them is through keywords and not through a kind of hands-on shuffling through, which was my image. Oh, we're going to go there and just be...
Days
with white gloves and dust, and I was looking forward to that. And instead, they plunked us down in front of a computer and said, you know, go at it. You can go at it by keyword, you can go at it by country. So a significant part of the show, as you know, is about the keywords and the structure of the archive.
Right.
I mean, they have some images there in Beirut, in the foundation itself. There is like maybe not 75,000, but there's like a room with, you know, very particular temperature. And then so they actually, they are able to go through a certain amount of images, but still it might be like 10,000, you know, so it would have been too much.
Right.
You know, so... and I think what's very interesting is when they started to do this project, that was 10 years ago, they, they didn't know too much about the technology and how much they could actually like have all these images into a database. So the way that it's online right now, it's not a very great interface. You know,
right.
It's not very accessible. You cannot do cross-reference between, for example, you know, keywords of countries and dates, and then just, you know, regular keywords. So you can either choose through keywords or through dates or through geographical. So it's not very, very, you know, a great way of searching images, you know.
Okay.
But I don't remember what I was going to say.
It's all right. I know. I often get that as well.
You do?
Yeah. So just for our listening audience out there, this is 88.9 FM, Neighborhood Public Radio. My name is Zephyr, and this is Frank Prattle. You're listening to Isabel Massu and Dory Bowen, who are talking about their new show, which fairly new show, but I hear that it's actually showed someplace else, but never mind. Not Given, Talking of, and Around Photographs of Arab Women, that's showing currently at SF Camera Work, which is downtown by the MoMA there, around the corner. And their website is, I think, SF...
SFCameraWork.org.
Yeah, okay. So you can go check that out online if you're listening along. So one of the questions that I have, and we were just kind of getting into this, is you guys were talking about the archiving aspect of it and how the Beirut archive had set up all these photographs, you know, 75,000 photographs. And in one of the wall texts at your show, you say that they actually borrow that system from... another city's system of archiving from Paris's. What did you guys go check out the Paris archive as well, or is that?
I spent a residency in France trying to track down this history of the archive, and I didn't find out a whole lot for a number of reasons. They did give me the information at the Arab Image Foundation that it was from Le Patrimoine Photographique, which is now merged with the Jeu de Paume, so it's been dissolved, essentially. And I did find out they're being sued by the donors of the photographs, which it has such notable people as Cortez and Lartigue, like very sort of fundamental European photographers, for merging or dissolving, that's disputable, into the Jeu de Paume. So I couldn't get any more information because of that situation. But I did get the original archive that it came from, so I could use that, Le Patrimoine Photographique's keywords and structure, and then compare that to what they're using at the Arab Image Foundation. And through that process, I was able to figure out which words they added and subtracted. And so that's how we based the show, was on added and subtracted words. There's a sound component that Isabel did with people reading the added and subtracted keywords in another language. And also, it started out in French, obviously. Then it was translated to English. But the notes that they gave me at the Arab Image Foundation showed that there was an intern who was German that translated through pictographs. little pictures of, like, trying to understand what's a tarbouche and a yashmak. And I was like, that's fascinating. So I became obsessed with this process of really rough process of translation that goes on behind the scenes in the archive. We think it's a very smooth, polished system, but in fact it's not. And the woman at the Arab Image Foundation just pretty much is on her own to make decisions about, oh, I think I'll add this word or that word. But the other interesting thing was that they kept the structure, because it is a very kind of what I would call anthropological structure. Human elements, you know, woman falls under human elements, under population. So there are these terms that come from a kind of sociological, anthropological lexicon.
Right.
So that was interesting that they would use, there was even ethnographer and ethnologist, so that they would use those terms and that structure to archive themselves, who were probably used to be archived by the French, because
right.
they were a protectorate of France, Lebanon,
right.
and
right.
so they were probably the people that were being ethnologized. And then they took the system, and so that it just became very interesting about this relationship between France and its colonies, and by extension, the West and the Middle East. The relationship that goes back and forth, not just one way.
Right. One question, you know, that I have in that aspect is, you know, upon first going to the show, you might, you know, a passerby might think to themselves, well, you know, who cares if what words are attached to these photographs? You know, like, they're just photographs. You know, you'd look at them, you know, whichever way you want to. But upon reconsidering that kind of, you know, stance, I think it's really important to emphasize the fact that, like, if you don't know certain keywords, or if you don't have, you know, ideas about what these keywords are, then you'll never see those images again. They're just lost to the digital void forever. And that in this way, like, it's actually incredibly important work what words get put with those, because unlike, you know, a stable photograph or something that, you know, you'll actually stumble along, you'll never see that. It's just in a file in a computer and nowhere, you know?
Yeah, and that gets to the issue of tags and browsers, which you've done work on, like, how we find things on browsers, right, Isabel?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not sure if I really understood what you said. But you actually, if you Google like woman plus Yashmak, one of the words, you're not going to actually find yourself onto the site of the Arab Image Foundation.
Right.
Okay, because the site is very like self-contained as far as the search motor.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that you would actually fall upon these images. You have to really like go through the Arab Image Foundation to, you know, get into
I think. If I understand correctly, you're talking about on their site.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
If
okay,
you
okay.
put in a certain term, you might get an image, but if you didn't know what it was termed under, you might not find it.
Well, and then even if, yeah, I mean, that's also the whole subjectivity of the archivist, because even if you think you're going to find a certain type of image, like I think the best example is if when we put like woman plus undressed, so it's an added word that they've put recently. Well, the first image that you see, it's actually a totally veiled woman with an undressed baby.
Nice.
You know, so
nice.
And then all the other image afterwards, and that was a very important choice we made, which is actually to keep the exact, order that the foundation itself, or not the foundation, I would say that the database, you know, decide to have, meaning like we didn't like put one image next to another in order to have like some kind of greater, you know, photographic arrangement. So when you see the image in the show, you see that first image with this naked baby and this veiled woman,
right.
And then right after that, you have a series of naked ladies. So it's, you know, it's very interesting to think about, you're thinking, okay, undressed, but then you're seeing a naked baby with like a covered woman, and it's like, wow, I was not looking for that.
Right. Yeah.
But then, yes, you do indeed, like, you know, find some interesting, you know, but that's I think it's the, you know, the nature of all search motor these days.
Right. Mm. One of the questions I have is, so you guys went into it with the knowledge that you had an idea that there would be some sort of schism or division slightly between the Paris archive system and the Beirut archive system. And you'd mentioned that there were words that were added and taken away.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of those words that you guys found?
Cigarette was added. Actually, there are a number of images from the film industry in Lebanon. So movie set was added.
Was added,
huh. Yeah. Backdrop of exterior scene. There are a number referring to the studio, and then there are more sort of bizarre, anachronistic, but I'm not sure. That's what I became interested in, orange. You know, could it be because of the still life as we've come to know it in the West does not include an orange? These are the questions I ask. And the Middle East, because of their industry, the orange is significant. You know, I say, okay, in most Western paintings, you might see a pheasant, you know, an apple. You don't see an
right.
orange. So there were other terms like that. What are some
also,
other ones?
Well, the one that you liked was daughter.
Oh, yeah, daughter was another one I dwelled upon because they deleted the words Buddhism, fascism, and hippie. And I thought that was interesting.
They deleted those words.
They deleted them.
All those words being in the same category.
What's that?
All those words, I guess, being deemed somewhat in the same category.
Under politics, I suppose.
And I also think that, and we did have a little bit of time to talk with the archivist there when we were in Beirut, that it wasn't something they felt you could read in an image, right? You can't tell if someone's a Buddhist or a hippie. But then they added daughter, meaning you can read a daughter off of an image, but so you can read familial relationships.
Right.
And I think that's a cultural issue, is that familial relationships are...
A brief UFO break.
Familial relationships are significant enough to the culture that you can read it, and of course sometimes you can. There's an older woman and a girl, so you could make that statement, but sometimes it's not that obvious, and it's filed under daughter. And I feel, so I thought, okay, well, maybe in the West, or this is from a French database in France, you feel like you can read political affiliation. You could say, oh, that's definitely a Buddhist. That's surely a fascist. But that you couldn't read a familial relationship off of an image. So I thought those things were interesting, too, because they suggest something bigger than what's in the image. They suggest what information we can glean off of just a picture of a person.
Right.
There was also another word that was added that kind of retained our attention. It was black person.
Black person and Asian person were the only persons. I mentioned it was something of an anthropological archive.
Right.
So there's types of persons under population.
But I mean, the thing, it was like black person, not, you know, it was like not putting it under like a country. It was like actually under a color of skin, which I thought that was interesting.
Right.
You know, because you didn't know when you see the picture where was the person coming from, but you knew they were black.
Right.
And that was very strange.
Did they do the same for, you know, let's say white people, or they,
no,
then they just
no,
had
no.
like, you know, French or Bulgarian?
No,
or?
No, there was just like black person. It's very strange.
There was black person and Asian person, and they had said they were going to remove those, but I haven't checked to see if they have.
Yeah, I mean, along the way they see, you know, where there is problematic, you know, things happening in the database itself. So that's the good part of it. They can actually remove some word and, you know, continue to add some also.
There's also, I want to mention, a kind of archival humor, the more you study an archive. Because there are hierarchies, you see what things get filed under. So there's a major category, a subcategory, sub-subcategory. So one that I found recently was that wrinkle was under attitude. I thought that was... It wasn't a biological attribute like some other...
Like, you know, I don't know, but like blonde hair or something, but it would be more under...
It's kind of like blonde, I guess. It's an attitude.
As everybody looks around, no blondes, okay. but so wrinkle would be more of an attitude for, you know, I guess a lifestyle than... I mean,
well, also it was
wrinkles,
only
though.
Applied to women. No men fall under wrinkle. And you see there are lots of wrinkled men. So obviously that when they are thinking wrinkle, they're thinking
right,
bad lifestyle. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's when it gets very interesting because you actually start to... The fun part we had was actually to try to make up an image of the archivist and understanding how a brain works.
Right.
So...
Right.
You know, with all these little things, so like black person and then wrinkle, and then of course the one that who is in the show is the most obvious is the disguise series.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the disguise.
Well, the disguise was definitely a word that both of us got. I mean, I didn't understand why she got hooked up with this orange business word. I was like, whatever. But then when actually we got together and thinking about these guys, and it was like, uh-oh, here, there's something very interesting. And of course, and I think that's one also example of this word who actually got very confused with the translation. They translated these guys from déguisé, which in French really means dressing up. And so disguise, you know, apparently I heard that there's much more meaning to disguise in English than just, you know, dressing up. And what's interesting is, like, the first image you come out of the database are, like, women dress up as men. And if you do women plus these guys. So you have a whole series of women who are dressed up as men, but not in a context of, like, you know, some kind of party, or it's just like very, like, you know, daily life images of women, you know, it's just like,
just,
yeah.
Just in trousers and stuff like that?
No,
or?
But I mean, you know, of course it's like, so our imagination is like, well, obviously they might be gay, you know, but it's like, and that's also one thing that got also us to be very interested is how do we, us perceive, I mean, see these images.
Right.
And why are we seeing them as gay when they are not classified under anything that, you know, could be like that?
Was there a classification for homosexual, gay, anything like that?
No, nothing.
Nothing?
Is it a classification? I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you can tell someone's that someone else's daughter by looking at them,
yeah,
you know,
right,
maybe,
exactly.
Oh, they're definitely gay, like, you know, like.
That's true. Well, we felt, I mean, we saw that because some of them are obviously just dress up as men, but some of them are obviously having a relationship with another person in the image and
right.
really look like, you know, there's something going on between those girls, you know, obviously.
Right.
So that was interesting. So that what we decided is actually like really looking at this this series much carefully and then pull out the series that it was in the show, some of them. And then also who has to do a lot of, you know, gender kind of like not very, you know, specific and very, I mean, it's hard to put a word on an image, you know, so,
right.
And this one, it's like you could put a lot of different words, but then, no, you know, these guys for me didn't really like relate to this image.
And I'm going to break in very quickly and say, you know, for people listening along, like, when she says it's hard to describe an image, you know, at first it might seem like that's bullshit, that, you know, it's actually easy to describe an image, but I dare you to go take a photograph and put it on your kitchen table and look at it and try to write down like 10 descriptive words that you would think would quantify that image for everyone else in the world to look at, you know, to be like, you know, where do you start? Like, you know, woman, man, you know, clothes, you know, hip, you know, even hip, like it doesn't work, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
so,
it,
yeah. Anyway, continue, sorry.
Yeah, the funny thing is like also sometime when you're talking about like describing an image, sometime we were seeing the word keyword like bench. And it's like, where is the bench? And it's like the woman decided to put, you know, this keyword, attribute these keywords into the image when the bench was like in a very far away remote place in the image that you could hardly see. And it's like, okay, so now...
Or the brick wall example. Arlette Farge wrote a piece for the journal that goes along with the show, and she just talks about certain words and images that she came upon in the archive. And one is a naked black man, and she talks about how significant this image is, that he would be pictured undressed and the way he's facing the camera. And after the description, she gives the keyword, which is brick wall. Because he's actually in front of a brick wall, as Isabel suggested, like far in the distance. You're like, okay, that must be denial, archival denial, because there's so much going on in the image, and then it's filed under brick wall. Right. So that kind of thing happens as well, where it's not even a question of interpretation, but you wonder if it's, you know, a kind of avoidance.
Right. So, I mean, you know, to get to the steamy stuff, were there pictures of naked people? Like you mentioned some.
Yeah.
I mean, but the reason kind of I asked that, other than, you know, kind of general interest in smut, is when people think of the Middle East now, it's definitely, I think, you know, safe to say that there's somewhat of a consideration that they tend to be more, you know, repressive about that sort of thing than, you know, the United States. The United States is a lot looser and, you know, women walking around and men walking around, you know, without their tops on occasionally, you know, very sexy and stuff like that. And then, you know, kind of the general conception of the Arab world is that it's very, you know, contained and restricted. And do you find that to be the case when you were looking through the actual archive?
Well, I don't know that this archive is representative of the Middle East, which is such a huge
right,
area. Even though they call it the Arab Image Foundation, it's based in Beirut. And so the greater part of it's from that region. Which would be Syria, Palestine, Lebanon. There is a lot from Egypt as well. But also the time period is, there's a bulk of the images come from around late 40s to 60s. And it's a very secular period. And I would call it a somewhat secular archive, although there are older photographs and there are photographs of veiled women. There are a number of photographs that are troping off of Western, even Western cinema and Western studio ideas. And there's a translation going back and forth, or a borrowing going back and forth. So Van Leo's photographs from Egypt, which we have a number of, the big one in the entryway of the woman putting her stocking on.
Right. They're really very, very steamy, by the way.
Very steamy, yeah. Well placed, too. So when you walk in, you see that. And it really has a Hollywood feeling, and he borrowed directly from Hollywood. And I would say that what's interesting to me is there's, as I said, a borrowing back and forth. I don't think it's just that they borrowed from us, but you can see that this issue of borrowing is much more happened than I think people realize at that period of time. And so the archive shows that period and that kind of secular moment. And I spoke to a number of people at the opening, and one woman from Iran was saying it's somewhat nostalgic for her of a period in Iran before the fundamentalist movement, when there was a secular moment as well. And it maybe is not common knowledge that there are moments in different nations and different regions. There are more open moments, more closed moments. And I think the archive depicts a much more Western-looking moment from the Middle East.
All right. And Isabel, what do you think about that?
I actually think the same than her on this one.
Good.
I mean, it is true that I think the time frame makes the whole difference. You know, it's those images, like, of course, I don't think that you would see... I mean, one thing we were afraid when we actually put up the show in Marseille, which that was a year ago, was that the gallery where it was situated in Marseille was in the middle of, you know, like I said before, in Algerian neighborhood. Even though they do not, the Algerians do not actually like feel like they have you know, anything to do with this part, the other part of the Arab world, which is Beirut and Palestine, etc., they still feel some kind of affiliation to it. And we were very afraid that those images, and especially the naked ladies, were going to offend a lot of, you know, the Algerian population, which a lot of women are veiled in Marseille. And so there was like, and you know, the funny thing is like, there's like, it's not us. You know, who cares? It's just like other people. And it's very interesting because for me, this is also when I really understood all the, you know, the amount of how we see the Arab world as just one place.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And how, and I think I actually saw it even before when I went to Algeria several times and then went to Beirut with Dory. And it was like, Beirut was like, Santa Barbara, something like this, the mall, you know, like Paso del Sol in Santa Barbara or something like that.
Right.
And then Algeria is very like Algeria, meaning like, you know, I don't go out in Algeria, you know, after like 5 p.m.
Really?
Yeah. So I really understood that how, you know, very different these two parts of the Arab world. And it's very interesting because the Lebanese do not want to associate at all with the Maghreb countries. I mean, the upper class, I would say, the upper class, you know, Lebanese people are like kind of like looking at the Maghreb country as down because there's a lot of like, you know, relationship to France in, you know, semi-slavery type of, you know, business going on there. And then the Lebanese have a very different relationship with the French, which is much more about like actually business and commerce.
Right.
So I think, I would agree that... the archive is very representative of a certain time frame and also another a certain, you know, part of the world, you know, and not the Maghreb country, even though they call themselves the Arab Image Foundation.
Right. So that's kind of one area of your guys' show. And then there was another portion that's kind of more, if you go into SF camera work, there's some couches set up with some kind of, I don't know, photo books to flip through and some headphones to listen to. And that's another part of the show. Would you guys kind of care to elaborate on that?
Well, that area is what we're calling the Curator's Archive. So it reveals the sources that we use to think through the show. And it's kind of like what you have here, I noticed, at Southern Exposure. Like, and I've also saw at the Black Factory show, they had something like that. Sort of couch with books, so maybe it's becoming
hangout work. Space.
Yeah, hangout space. And if you want to hang out and look at the kind of books and the ideas that went into it, so there's that. And also, Isabel did a sound component, which we sort of came up with a process which refers directly to the title and helps explain it. It's called Not Given, and everyone always asks us, why is it called Not Given? And I don't know if I want to give why it's not given, because I like the idea of not giving. But one of the ideas we had was to see where the image goes in people's imagination, and that started with the discussion we had about the veil in France, and what is it that people were thinking when they saw this image of a young girl with a headscarf.
Right.
So how could we get at this, the Western imaginary? And the process we came up with was sort of a John Cage chance-inspired process, which is to ask a woman to describe herself in a photograph and then have someone listen to that and re-describe it, and have someone listen to that and re-describe it, etc., three times, so that we see sort of where it goes in a somewhat chance way. Where do people end up? What image do they arrive at in their own imagination?
So just to clarify real quickly, the first woman, looks at a photograph of herself, or does it from memory?
Looks at a photograph of herself, and we had a somewhat, at least at the beginning, a fairly strict script, which was very basic, which was, what do you see in the image? What do you think happened after the image? Who do you think took the image? And so it would go through a very descriptive process.
Okay. So you have a woman looking at a picture of herself. Were they old pictures, new pictures? Or?
Well, it's actually a picture that they decide to describe. So it's really a picture that they really like of themselves and that I feel that represent them at their best.
That's a toughie, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Did,
and it's,
did you pick one of yourself?
No, because I'm not Arab and we only ask Arab women
Right. Have you ever tried to pick a picture that's representative of you?
No, I never did, actually.
It's hard as hell.
I'm sure. Yeah. It was hard. It was...
Because everybody wants to be cool.
Well, actually, you know what? If you look at, I'm not going to promote the Journal of SF Camera Work, but some of the images are reproducing it, and some women decided to take very, very heavy images of themselves at a very hard moment. And it's very interesting because I felt like they were much more interested in showing where they were coming from, or trying to like portray it in that image through sound, rather than actually, because they knew that the people might not see the image, the other person,
right.
Any case. And so I think it was more about their own history, and so some women actually picked up some image who are very, devastating of themselves,
Did you care to elaborate?
Well, meaning like, So the process was, I was asking them questions, I was asking them to choose an image, and then so they picked up an image, and then this woman picked up an image at a moment where she actually got raped by terrorists.
Are you serious?
Well, right after, like a month after the rape of terrorists. And for her, it was like the moment where it was, of her life, and she was getting remarried, and it was really like emotional, very hard moment. And I was just, pretty shocked that actually she picked up that moment. So, I mean, that picture representing her. But she felt like she was not completely coming out of it, So
right.
For her, it was important to talk about that, that moment. Another woman in France who was originated from Algeria and decided that she could not pick up only one image and picked up actually two images. And the first image was of a woman, of a picture of her at a school, school picture when she was 14. And then the other image was at a wedding day. And then she's basically explaining that between those two images, there's only 1 month's difference. And it's very incredible to look at those two images because it looks like there is like, 5, 6, 7 years difference between the two images. And so, the what was interesting is the processus was really to like have the second person listening to the interview of that first person, but never see
the photograph. Right. Yeah.
And then repeating it 2 or 3 times, and then see what happened at the end of it. And sometimes people were going towards a very different directions, and sometimes, and especially in that case of those two images, people were starting to get into like forced marriage, thinking that obviously, since there was only 1 month's difference, that you know, obligatory, she had to be like, you know, forced married to her husband, which in fact she was not. So then I think it's the interview that really, like, I would say represent the most what we were trying to do, which was like, how is the Occidental mind, where does it go? Where do we go with these ideas, and then where do we get them?
Right.
So I had to redo the interview for the installation in San Francisco, because obviously the immigration is not the same. Obviously, the language in France was in French, and here it's in English, with, you know, some strong accents, but in English.
Right. What do you think the largest divergence of kind of original narrative of the photograph and, you know, kind of the end of the telephone? How far did people go? What was the biggest fiction that you recall?
Well, actually, there was an interesting one that Margaret was involved with, and that was the image. It was a young girl who she was young in the photograph, very young, and she described how she had a cigarette in her mouth in the hospital and was sort of speculating about what this meant, about how she developed and her sense of gender. But she described it in such a way that by the end there was this doctor that became a major character, and he was there, and he was Swedish, and something about Swedish people in the hospital. And do you want to say something?
This is Margaret Tedesco is going to get on the mic right now.
Here, I'll give it to Margaret.
I was third in line with this interview process, and the second person that I listened to the description of the photograph from their point of view, became very invested in, and a lot of emotionality also around getting it right, getting what they heard right and describing it. So when I got to my turn, it became a very, when I was listening to it, there were people in the frame, Swedish doctors, it was a hospital room, there was a baby with a cigarette in its mouth. And then when I got asked later in the interview between Dori and Isa for my part, they asked me what the gender was of the person that I was listening to, and I thought it was older man who was speaking, and in fact it didn't turn out to be a man. There was colors in the room. There was a defiance of authority, in a sense, that the baby was defying authority by having a cigarette, a female baby with a cigarette in its mouth. It was really a very interesting process to be a part of this interview system.
Right.
And I enjoyed it tremendously because it falls prey to my kind of work, my personal work. So there you go.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to go.
Yeah, I think it's what I want to add, you know, which is very different than what we did in Marseille, which is that we decided to give back the picture, the photograph, to the public, meaning that in Marseille we had the interview, and we had across from the interview the image was in display, the original. And that was another story, because we really were trying also to make a point about the importance of, like, actually, like, how would you say, non-digital image, like the real image, the archival, personal archival image, and then the 700 images that we were showing, but were, like, digitized and then, very easy of accessing. But those five images we had took us, like, months to get them, because they were coming from Algeria, and then were sent through a friend who had to go back and then give it to us, etc., etc. So the funny part is that the person that Margaret is talking about, which is the second respondent, decided, told us, well, it's interesting that we are not seeing the image when the public is going to see the image. And then we were thinking about that, and we decided not to include the image as in obvious manner, meaning that the images are actually included into those two little books that you see,
right.
My own personal archive.
Right.
And so you, it's kind of a game. You have to look for them and maybe find them or not. So that's
right. No, I definitely, I took a while to get one. But the baby smoking, that's a dead ringer.
Yeah.
Which is actually one of my favorite questions, actually, is what is funnier, a baby smoking or a monkey smoking? And I'll ask you both this question. I mean, they're both offensive. They're both crazy offensive. But what's funnier?
I think it depends on the cultural context. Here,
yours, yeah.
I think a baby smoking is funnier because there's so much anti-smoking propaganda that the horror of it is somewhat humorous to me. And the specter of it.
That's a funny question.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't say it would be easy today.
No,
you know?
It's really hard.
Well, we can come back to it later.
Let me think about it.
So another thing, when you first walk in the show, and one of my favorite things is to the immediate right, you have an image of, and this is perfect. This is like a game of telephone right here because I'm totally going to screw it up. But an image of a woman kind of turning to the camera and another walking by the camera and a guy kind of standing to the far left. And there's a white square painted on the wall next to this photograph. And kind of the instructions on the wall are to kind of step back and look at one and then look at the other and kind of move your eyes back and forth between them. What were you guys thinking of that?
Well, I was thinking of there's a very simple perceptual exercise you can do, there has to be very strong light. And sometimes you can actually use a flashlight. So that's the strongest example. If you turn a flashlight on in a dark room and you see the image and then you turn it off and you will see the after image come back to you. It also works in the same way with just a strongly lit image. If you look at it for long enough and you look away, you see the after image. Right. So the idea of that is that the show, the basis for the show and the idea of Not Given is that it's a way for you to come into contact with your own imagination. And your own perceptual biases that you bring to the imaging act. So that's how we wanted to introduce the show, that it's about the Arab Image Foundation, it's about the archive, but it's also about interpretation and the phenomenology of perception. So my niece told me it doesn't actually work.
What? It works for me.
Did it work for you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
But you have to really stare at the one image for a while.
And what did you see? Did you see an after image?
Yeah, you just get like a little ghostly thing from, you know, kind of retina burn left over.
Because
you know?
She said, Aunt Dory, it just doesn't work. I was like, shh. But
come with me, child.
My child, come here.
did it work for you, Isabel?
Well, actually, it's funny that we're talking about this while Margaret is here, because we did a piece with Margaret a long time ago, who was kind of like the precursor of that idea, which is what was the name of our piece?
The name of the show is at the Walter
McLean. It was
called Alien.
Angels or Aliens. Yeah, Angels or Alien. And then we decided to Margaret had find a card, which is like some kind of religious card, that when you actually see a negative image and then with three little white dots on it, you can actually look in the sky for over a second and then see the positive image of the Virgin Mary or something like that.
It was a holy card from when I was a child that I had.
Yeah, a holy card.
You guys did Bill Gates?
Yeah, we decided to do that. That was in the 90s when, you know, he was starting to become a vision, you know, of some sort. And so we did a piece who was based on that, about like how, but it was more about the negative space becoming positive and then especially looking at it in the sky. Yeah. But it was, that's kind of like, you know, the idea. And it worked much better in the sky than, kind of agree with your niece. It's an idea. I don't think it has to also work. I think it's more of the idea of it, you know, that.
Well, you know, I'll let you guys fight that out a little bit later. Where are you going from here? Is this show touring, or are you guys working on other projects together? What's the future of that?
We're not working on projects together.
Ever.
And it's not moving.
You mean yet?
Yet. Well, it's a very labor-intensive project because in this case, it had to be almost entirely remade in English. So that was one thing. And also, the system was designed for the setup in Marseille. It's on Max MSP software, so that had to be reorganized a bit for the show here. So we're pretty exhausted, and I don't know if it's going to travel. I think it would be nice. I mean, I really like the idea, which is that as the show travels, it changes as well. And so that's why this has more of sort of a queer bent. The show in Marseille was more about the relationship between Algeria and France, and we emphasized the French aspect and the history of France, the history of photography as well, and photography's relationship to the Middle East. And I think it's wonderful, and I stand by that, but in terms of the labor that it actually takes to reconceive a show based on its location, and also I should say the sound component, we decided should arrive where the show arrives. So it arrived in the third person speaking about the photograph arrived in Marseille. It would be someone from Marseille, and it was actually the curator there who spoke about it, and then we did the same for the San Francisco show, and it had a sort of snowball effect. So the journal has essays from people that we also met along the way that became part of the process.
This is the SF Camera Work.
The SF Camera Work Journal, right. Has an essay by Paul Emmanuel Audin, who is one of the members of La Compagnie, where it was shown in Marseille. Arlette Farge, whose book in French we got very excited about, and Isabel just called her. She's this very famous historian in France and somehow talked her into participating. So she wrote an essay. And so it's got the snowball effect, which is wonderful. It created its own community. But in terms of taking on another traveling show, we'd have to really think seriously about whether we were able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that we're not there to promote, you know, the Arab Image Foundation. They're not paying us for it especially.
Not yet.
And
just quickly before to talk about that, do you guys feel that you actually had a large effect on the Arab Image Foundation? Like this much publicity? I mean, most archives don't receive this kind of, you know, publicity ever. You know, like the Buffalo Archive, you know, I'm sure it's just kind of dwindling away. And enough, I don't know that, but you know, maybe.
Well, they definitely are more known in Europe, I would say, than in the United States. And there was no show ever about the Arab Image Foundation in the West Coast. So I do think that, you know, it's helping to promote their work. And then and especially also through the two members, Akram Zatari and Walid Rad, who are part of the members of the archive. But yes, I think that they were, you know, very happy and very pleased about the work we did. And I remember in Marseille, somebody asked us, you know, how do you feel about, you know, being Occidental and representing or talking about like the Arab Image Foundation. And I decided that I didn't want to keep that question for myself and then give it back to the Arab Image Foundation. And what did Tamara say? I can't remember.
She said she couldn't believe we asked her such a stupid question.
Yeah, well. So that was pretty clear that they were not having themselves a problem with having, you know, two Western women, you know, doing that type of work, which, you know, for me, that was my answer, really, to everything. So they're very wonderful people and very open to a lot of things, and I think they gave us an incredible opportunity to work with them. You know?
I have to say, I was nervous about writing an essay about them and revealing certain things. It was somewhat delicate because they gave us permission and they gave me information, but they never gave me all the information. And when I wrote my essay for the journal about them, I talked about how westward-looking they are, where they get their grants from. I also felt like I was digging a tunnel under the archive to the patrimoine photographique and seeing that this relationship from France to Lebanon also returns to France. And I didn't know if that's something they would want to reveal, because they do call themselves the Arab Image Foundation, not right. The Arab French Image Foundation. And so I was nervous about that. But it, as it turns out, they really loved the essay, which you just don't know. So I think an interesting part for me was working in tandem with them in conjunction, rather than just working on a subject from a distance. I actually was in touch with them and had to ask them for certain things. And And so it was a more delicate project than something that was just completely theoretical and distant. And they did like it, so that was interesting.
That's great. So do you guys, unfortunately, I think we're about out of time. Do you have any last words you'd like to add?
Maybe the dates of the show or something
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
Like this kind of information. It's until the 26th of May. And it's...
we're also doing a panel on April 25th at 7 p.m. at Camera Work. And we're going to also have Tariq El-Aris, who wrote an essay for the journal. And he teaches Middle Eastern Studies at NYU. And he's a burgeoning videast as well.
A videast? So,
yes.
Oh, I like that.
He's going to show his work.
So my name is Zephyr. You're listening to Frank Prattle. I've had Isabel Massou and Dori Bowen on, who have a terrific show that you really should go check out called Not Given, talking of and around photographs of Arab women down at SF Camera Work, which is on Mission and 3rd, I think, between 2nd and 3rd there?
Between 3rd and 2nd.
Right.
Next to the Steinway Piano Store.
And it's up till May 26th, so go check it out. Thank you both
That's
so
right.
much.
Thank you.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You, Zephyr.